The views and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of our sponsors. Ha!
Welcome to the Small Business Hour with your host, Mark Dio. It's 60 minutes of red-hot talk to help you develop your small business.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need. All right, folks, welcome to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. My name is Mark Dio. Joining me, of course, the inimitable Matthew Walker. We're coming to you live from Los Angeles, and of course, we're your small business advocates. Our show is dedicated to helping you to become more positive, more productive, and a whole lot more profitable. Every single week, we bring you experts and expert advice in an attempt to help you, of course, to run your business more effectively. And of course, this week is no different. That is what we will be doing. Our good friend, Maury Scheckman, will be joining us in our second segment, and we'll be talking about how relationship selling is maybe the worst thing that we can do. That's pretty surprising, huh, Matt? Relationship selling. I always think about relationship selling as a positive thing, but Maury is going to come and tell us about a new Harvard Business Review study that actually indicates that maybe that's not so good. So we'll be talking about that. Also talking about some of the things happening in the small business arena, both with regard to some of the trends, some of the things happening in terms of the economic, financial community, ability to have access to capital, I should say, and what some other small businesses are doing that you might want to entertain, or maybe not. First thing I wanted to start with, Matthew, is that some people say we are coming out of a recession. Other people say we're primed for a double dip recession. I don't know, Matthew. I don't know what's going to happen. No one knows what's going to happen. But apparently, Business Wire, which is actually a Berkshire Hathaway company, has published some research indicating that a significant portion, 44% of small businesses believe that the economy is going to continue to be volatile. That, in fact, the economy is really the one thing that is standing in the way of our success. And so the suggestion to be maybe thinking of short-term planning as well as long-term planning and thinking about how to preserve some access to cash so that you can make it to the long-term plan suggestion by a Berkshire Hathaway company. And this is, of course, probably a good thing to pay attention to. Also, that access to capital will be very tight. That's probably no surprise. Sort of sluggish growth here. I read in another article, Matthew, that there were 55,000 jobs added in November. And this article was, you know, boasting about how wonderful that is. But That's pathetic. I mean, that's pathetic when you think of there's 27 million small businesses, 55,000 jobs. I mean, that's I don't know what you think of that. Are you there, Matthew? Are you dead or are you alive?
I am here.
I have a live person there. Or I don't. Sometimes I think, I wonder if Matthew's there or not. You're there, right?
I am here. Yes.
That's good. So, what do you think of that?
I have no idea. I have zero comment on the jobs because we get different numbers every single week. We can look at the thing and it's like, well, this many jobs were shed or this many jobs were added, and I never know what they actually mean on these numbers. And
typically, let's be honest. Large businesses, big businesses, are losing net jobs every month because large businesses are outsourcing more jobs than they are hiring people here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
On a net basis, they are hiring people, but they're also losing a lot.
They tend to be shedding the good jobs and just hiring people at bottom level jobs.
Yeah, yeah, and even those jobs are really getting offshored. People, in other countries, who can do the same job. In some cases, better, but certainly cheaper, at least cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So that has a negative impact on our economy, because we have to now depend on small businesses to raise the number of the employment numbers. And when you're talking about adding 55,000 jobs in a month and when spread across 27 million businesses, that's kind of pathetic. That's kind of sad. But nevertheless, those numbers are apparently what exists, at least according to this study. 14%, 1 in 7 of small businesses surveyed said they would probably close down their companies if revenues dropped or continued to drop over the next year or two. And for sole proprietors, that was 23%. So imagine now you have small businesses who are supporting the economy, who are really holding us up, saying, you know what, if business drops anymore, the hell with it, I'm just going to sell it. And you think about small businesses and sole proprietors, Matt. You say, here's somebody who is a sole proprietor. Okay, maybe their business does $100,000 or $200,000 a year. So it generates enough income for them to live, relatively comfortably, or at least live, paycheck to paycheck, at least that, right, like most people. And so then you look at the fact that, well, they don't have pensions. Well, they don't have 401ks unless they, fund it themselves, which is very expensive for a small business. They don't have access to the kind of health insurance that you can as an employee with a larger business, or God forbid, with the federal government or the state government. I mean, it's just it's obscene the kind of benefits they have, and of course we're paying for that as taxpayers. And so you look at it and you say, why should I? Why should I grow my business? Why should I stay in business? I think what I'm going to do is just go get a job with the government, or go get a job with a big company, which isn't going to give me the freedom that I want, or possibly the economic growth potential. But heck, my business continues to shrink here, and I continue to have more government intervention. Even little businesses, all this intervention is really killing us. So I guess on the other hand, those entrepreneurs who, like myself, I mean, there's no way I could really – I mean, if I worked a job, can you imagine? How long would I last with a boss, Matt? What do you give me?
13 seconds.
13 seconds. And I think he's optimistic, folks. I think he's optimistic. So I couldn't do it. So the other alternative is to be able to, figure out how to bring in more business, Matt. That's the other side, right? How do we bring in more business? And that's what we're going to talk about in our next segment. So I guess on the negative side, looks like, according to these studies, and most of those studies that we read, things are tough, and they're going to stay tough for a while. Some may elect to just bail. Some may elect to just hang in there. But we're going to talk in our next segment about how Maury Schechtman says, sometimes we can actually gain more ground by challenging people than we can by being the nice guy or girl. And that should be a fascinating discussion, because the first thing I think about is that, holy cow, we have to figure out how to build stronger relationships with people. And yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. But by challenging them, in some cases, we can become more valuable to them. So when we come back, we're going to be talking about that. And we got all kinds of good stuff for you. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. Go nowhere. We'll be right back. The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results. Winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster, Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you'll receive an email to let you know and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at complianceposter.com.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. Mark Dio, Matt Walker with you, coming to you live from Los Angeles. And of course, we're your small business advocates. And of course, every single week we bring you someone who is an expert in the area of business development. And I mentioned earlier in our first segment that we're going to be joined here, or we are joined here, by Maury Scheckman, one of our good friends with the Scheckman Institute, management consultants, and really agents of change for organizations, companies large and small. And, you know, Maury's been at this for, we won't say how long, Maury, but for a long time. We won't say how long, right? But for a long time. And Maury's going to talk to us today about the challenger type style. And it's a kind of interesting, Maury, because we always think of salespeople as, you know, relationship-oriented. And when we're recruiting salespeople, we think, well, we want people who are good at building relationships. And of course, I think that's true. We do. But sometimes we may put too much emphasis on just the relationship sort of competency. Whereas I know you're going to tell us about this recent study in the Harvard Business Review where they found that actually having someone with a competency of challenging others is actually even more powerful than relationships. So tell us about what was discovered and your spin on this, Maury.
Yeah, I think it's important to add that all of this is a result of the information explosion. And technology, both have redefined the classical notion of the relationship-driven salesperson, or for that matter, the relationship-driven business person. What information and technology has done has made everything a commodity except challenging people. So that if you're the old traditional relationship builder and you bring a lot of information to a prospect, you haven't brought any real value added anymore, because that information is endlessly available to people, and throughout the culture, just ubiquitous everywhere. So the irony of our situation now that we're operating in is if you're the brightest person in the world and you bring a lot of information to the sales interaction, you're replaceable by technology. And what we need is a different kind of relationship. I don't think the study fundamentally said relationships are bad or we should discard them, but it fundamentally said you need to reinvent the notion of that sales relationship
now,
and do it fairly dramatically.
Now, I read the study too, and I in fact agree with it, but as a devil's advocate here, I think some people can look at this, and I've actually read some of the comments. I don't know if you've read some of the comments, you know, like underneath where you read that Harvard Business Review article, then underneath there's a whole bunch of comments. But right. if you read – you've read some of those? Have you read some of those?
Yeah, I have read some of those, yeah.
Yeah, so some of them – some of those people are actually – you know, they seem like they were somewhat angry at the whole notion of the fact that, you know, that we're downplaying the value of – you know, relationship building, and the fact that in by challenging people that we're actually potentially damaging rapport or damaging our position of influence. How dare we? What's your feedback on that? Just that in and of itself.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people are angry and very threatened because their whole view of building relationships is built around consensus and making people comfortable. And again, if that's all you do, you'll simply become the visiting nurse of selling. You know, you'll people like you, want to talk to you forever, and you'll never close the deal. Because what people are looking for at this point is what added value do you bring to a sales interaction? Anyone can sell products and services. The real issue is, why should I deal with you in an age of information? And the answer to that, that it's very disturbing to lots of people, is you're going to deal with the person who challenges you to think in a new way, who doesn't tell you what you want to hear, and who truly provokes you to think about why you're running your business the way you are. If you don't bring that these days, there's no value added to the interaction. And there's no reason I ought to deal with you.
Now, that being said, we can push people. We can push people the wrong way. I mean, it is possible. Let's be honest, to actually push someone's buttons and push them the wrong way. For example, I mean, I've done this myself. I'll be quite honest, because I, by nature, as you know, Maury, am a challenger. That's what I do. And sometimes people, and I know it happens to you too. Sometimes people don't like it. They don't like it now. You know, you could say, well, too bad, you know, that's because they need to change. And, you know, if they didn't change, you know, then they're going to be in the same boat anyway. But, you know, if we don't get the business, then we don't have an opportunity to help them to influence that change. So how do we balance the relationship with the ability to, you know, get people to think in a new way?
Well, I think, you know, it's a good point. I think the issue is for every professional to decide is who's the clientele you want to work with. And you, there's no doubt you can make some sales and get some clients because you tell them everything they want to hear and you give them lots of information and you create that, the old type of relationship. You will get that client. Our experience is that client will be slow to pay, high maintenance, and drive you nuts. So that really is your point.
It sounds familiar, right, Matt?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I tell people all the time there are two prices to a sale. One is money, and the other is aggravation. So you've got to decide, any professional needs to decide, how much aggravation do you want to sustain in a client load?
Yeah.
And I've made that decision a long time ago that I don't want a lot of aggravating clients. And if they don't want to be challenged, that means they're going to be a pain in the ass to deal with later.
Sure. Now, why is that? Why are folks sometimes, if they're not challenged to think differently, why do they become a pain in the ass to deal with later? Why does that happen?
Because they're driven primarily by control, and they want to control the salesperson, and they do that by not paying on time, by calling all odd hours, by sucking up non-productive time. Those are all forms of control. And people who don't want new information or don't want to be challenged, by and large, want to control that interaction. And that means you're going to have a lot of grief to deal with.
That happens for consultants like yourself or myself. But it also happens for folks in more commoditized-oriented businesses that are selling products or services. You know, they could be professional services. I mean, you know, it could be legal services, actually. Or it could be, you know, architectural services. Or it could be products, various different, you know, products that are consumable products, you know, consumer or B2B product, you know, B2B business equipment, that sort of thing. And so what happens is they want the same sort of solution that they've had in the past at a cheaper price, or and or they want a higher level of service for the same sort of solution they had in the past at a cheaper price, or a higher level of service for the same product or solution they've had in the past at the same price. But either way, if we as people in the selling role recognize that that client, by making a change or by changing the way they operate, the way their people operate, can actually achieve greater return on investment for this product or service in use, and we challenge them to make some changes. You know, for example, it could be as simple as moving a copy machine from one area of the office to another area of the office. So let's say you're selling copy machines. I'm going to just keep, make this practical, Maury. And so you're the salesperson. You're going, you know, if you were able to move this – don't talk about moving my machine, you know. No, but I'm just saying, you have the we've looked at the oh, don't talk about that. I want it there. And then now that person is bugging you all the time because, you know, it needs more maintenance, or it's, you know, not serving their purposes. Or, and you said, well, you know, if you would have moved the machine, or you would have attached it to your network, or something like this, I think that's what we're talking about here. That's a very simple way that a, let's say, copier salesperson can challenge a customer, but they're fearful. Now, how do we do this? How can we do this in a way that preserves the relationship? How can we challenge these folks?
Oh, well, I think that you have to look at anybody, any professional who's selling anything at this point needs to look at their core assumptions around conflict. And if your core assumption around conflict is that conflict destroys relationships, you're going to play it very low risk and very low key.
Sure.
And that will keep you plateaued in your profession. Growth is about taking on conflict and understanding that most of the time conflict builds a better relationship.
Sure.
But for most salespeople to realize that, they have to take a risk. They have to generate some conflict, see that for the right people that you want as clients, it creates a better relationship. But at the core of challenging people is your grounding assumptions about conflict and how it impacts relationships.
Good point.
And that holds people back more than anything else.
Yeah, I think when we think about challenging someone, we think about raising conflict. And we think about, I want to win this business. I'm attempting to create influence with this client. I want to win trust. This is not a good thing for me to do, to win trust. But the interesting thing is, as the study demonstrated, is that I think the numbers for the challengers versus the relationship-oriented people, I think there were something like 7% of those very successful people were relationship-oriented, where it was something like 54% of the challengers were successful. It was a huge number. So actually what happens is, by challenging someone in a proper way, you actually win greater trust from them, and you're far more valuable to them.
And you create greater credibility. I teach my clients all the time that the earlier you challenge, the greater credibility you're going to have with the client.
Sure.
Because if I challenge you early, take a risk early, you know very well that 3 months, 6 months, a year down the line, I'm not going to lie to you then and feed you a lot of bull.
Right.
So the challenge creates a better relationship long-term and greater credibility all the time. And if another important point, if you don't challenge a client, you're purely in a transaction. And what happens in transactions is price becomes the issue. And then you get ground down all the time, and you're working your butt off for less and less money. If you want to get paid what you're worth, then challenge people, and there'll be very little griping then about cost.
I have a client who hasn't bought into this yet, but I think they're on the verge, because what happens with this client is that they're constantly in the mode of having to drop their price to meet competitive forces.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they actually provide a higher level of service and a better product. And this is very confusing to them. And so we've talked about this and said, well, you know, is this really because people are stupid that they deal with your competitors instead of you and your product or service is better? Don't they know that? They've had experience, most of them, with that. Yeah, they have. But they don't perceive it to be better. Well, then you have to say, well, why don't they perceive my service or product to be better? And why do they keep going to whoever's the cheapest? Well, because their hope, and this is kind of interesting because this is exactly what happened with this client, is that a client left them for a penny less, you know, a buck less, you know. I'm just using that as a, you know, an example. You know, they were cheaper, a little bit cheaper, not a whole lot cheaper. And what happened is they're now getting information that they're not happy with this client, and they're asking my client, hey, can you actually can we go back to you, but can you match this price? And I said, say no. You got them right where you want them, and ask them why. Let's get into why is it that they're not happy there? Well, yeah, we know why, Mark. It's because that when they went to this company didn't adapt their systems to their systems. And I said, well, will you? And they said, oh, no, we can't. Well, why not? Because their systems are crazy. I said, well, why don't you help them to change their systems? Oh, they don't want to do that. Well, this is exactly where we are. Now, imagine if you could help them to change their systems, would it be better for them? Oh, yeah, it would. Would they make more money? Oh, yeah, they would. Would they be happy to pay you more money? Yeah, they would. And so this is a perfect example of realizing, and maybe some of our listeners are in that position, Maury, where, you know, you're fearful to challenge your customer on making some changes that would actually be very valuable for them. Why? They're going to leave you anyway. Isn't that right, Maury? Because they don't perceive you to be valuable at this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, if you don't bring anything new, any new insight, if you don't push people beyond the nine dots, they're gonna leave you. It's only a matter of when, not if.
Yeah, it's a matter of price, or it's a matter of yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. There's got to be something that people are paying for. People are very circumspect at this point about how they spend their money. The global economic meltdown has made everybody look at every dollar they're going to spend in a different way. And one thing they're looking at is, but what am I getting for my money, other than a simple product or a simple service that I can get almost anywhere? So now the kind of irony of it is, again, that there's got to be a very special relationship going on for people to give you their money. And that special relationship has to revolve around challenge and around telling people something they don't already know. If I tell you what you already know and simply charge you less, you're going to tire of that very early.
Yeah, you're going to find someone who can do it for even less because it's not valuable. Now, let's talk about sales managers. If I'm a sales manager and I have, you know, I've trained my people and I've recruited people based on their ability to build good relationships. And, you know, I've got folks who, you know, they are able to match with different personalities and they're able to get people to like them. And those are very important traits to have. But they're not as effective in this economy today as they were in the past. No one is, so I guess we'll just hang on. Or how would you coach them as a sales manager, Maury, to try to build a challenger mentality among their people? Or would you say get rid of them and hire challengers? I mean, how would you go about that?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a great question. First of all, I've come to terms with the reality that most sales training, and I would say 90% of companies at this point, is less than useless. What it teaches people is hard skills right away, pay little attention to who they are, and then send them out like lamb to slaughter, because all they do know is a lot of information. How we train sales managers to reverse the training process entirely. First thing to do with their people is confront them on who they are personally and how they're living their lives and what they want to accomplish by working there.
Let me stop you there because if you were to say that to certain people, they would stop you there. So I'm going to stop you there. Mm-hmm. Please forgive me, and I don't want to be rude, but that is precisely what they would do. They would go, wait. Right. You're telling me, mm-hmm. you just said you want me to challenge my people on the way they live their life?
Absolutely.
So you mean like challenge them, like the fact that the way they live their life. Okay, so they have like five girlfriends, or they're married and they have and I happen to know they're cheating on their wife. It's not affecting their business, so why should I challenge them on that?
I would challenge you back and say, of course, it's affecting their business. All business is personal. There's no such thing as a business problem. They're only personal problems that manifest themselves in business.
But it's none of my business that they're cheating, though.
But it's all of your business, because it's fundamentally a values issue. Okay? And what is cheating about? This is not about morality. This is not about religion. This is about core values. And I've never met a CEO who says one of my core values is lying. Okay, they all say the same thing. Yeah. We want to have an honest company. We want people to be dealt with honestly.
Yeah.
So I know that Jerry is screwing the secretary instead of having fidelity to his wife. What's wrong with that behavior? It's fundamentally dishonest. Okay? And with my clients, you can't work for them and be dishonest. Nor can you work in my firm and screw around on your wife. Because it's an honesty issue, not a moral issue, not an ethical issue. You know, we have a saying in our work, you get hired for what you know, you get fired for who you are.
Yep.
No one
gets
stupid in their work. No one forgets how to program. No one forgets how to deliver something. What happens is they lead disorganized, chaotic, self-destructive personal lives, and then they get fired. Mm-hmm. And everyone says, see, what happened to that guy? He was so bright and so smart and so good at what he did, but he was a personal disaster. He was an accident waiting to happen. And sales managers who ignore that stuff do it at their peril.
Sure. Now let's take the sales manager who has a couple of folks working for him, yeah, and they are relationship oriented. Can you and they're very good at that, and they're very good, and everybody likes them. You know, you do surveys and you say, how do you like your salesperson? I love them, but yet the salesperson's numbers just are going down, or they're really flat.
Mm-hmm.
And they really seem to work hard. They really seem to try hard. They have good organizational habits. I mean, they're on the phone all day. They're making calls, and, you know, they're out there cold calling. They're working very hard. I've gone out there with them. They sound like they got a pretty good pitch. They know the product. They're able to, you know, they're pretty good. They're well known out there. They know the industry. But, you know, as far as challenging people, you know, not really, not as much. But can I make them into doing that? Was that possible to change someone? How do you do that?
Yeah, you do that by doing to them what you want them to do to their clients. You challenge them. Why are you here? What do you want to make, and why do you want to make it? What are the key drivers in your life? If you don't know those things about your salespeople, you have no opportunity to develop them and no hope that they're going to change any of their behaviors. It's very interesting, for example, with money, salespeople don't make a penny more than they need. They never make what they want. They will only make what they need. And if their needs are very low and they live, you know, slightly above poverty, or they have a secret form of income, they're not going to produce for you. That's something you've got to know. So when we work with a sales force, we know every one of their personal goals, everyone's personal goals. What do you want to make this year? What do you need to make, and why do you need to make it? If you don't know that, you're shooting in the dark.
And so if someone comes to you and says, I need to make 100 grand this year, if I make 100 grand, then I could live pretty comfortably. I mean, I can't save a lot of money. I'll save a little bit of money, but I mean, that's okay. You know, I'm not trying to be, Bill Gates here. I just want to have, you know, a decent income and a little bit for retirement, and I'm happy. Now would you look at that and say, hold on a second, what can I do to get this person to want to make 200 grand, and what will they do with that money? What will they do with that? If you had another 100 grand, what would you do with them? I mean, would you go that way with them, or how would you define it?
That's a good question, Mark. There's an intervening step that most people miss.
Okay.
So if you were to say to me, Mark, you're working for me, you want to make 100 grand, I'd say, great. Take out a piece of paper and allocate every dollar.
Oh.
Okay, because otherwise it's like a five-year-old wants to be a fireman.
Yes.
You know, these salespeople, I've got to know exactly how they're going to allocate that money. Because if I don't, they won't make it.
So I'm going to give you – so I'm working for you. You're my sales manager. So right. So I'm going to give you my budget. I'm going to say, okay, here's the $100,000 that I'm making, and here's how – so, you know, 10 goes to food, 40 goes to mortgage, 15 goes to car payments and insurance. And so you want to see that? Is that – isn't that kind of over the line?
I want you to do it, and I want to see it. And that will, if there's any guarantee, that will guarantee that you have the shot at making it. The first thing we want to do is make sure that you meet your current needs. You'd be amazed at how many salespeople don't do that.
Can we even ask salespeople to do that? I mean, isn't that personal information? If I'm a salesperson, I might say, you know what? I appreciate that you're trying to help me and motivate me here and stuff, but, you know, that's kind of personal information. I'm not comfortable giving that up. Okay, now we do live in, especially Southern California here, where it's sort of the Nazi state. There's Nazis here. I don't know if you're aware of that, but there are people with swastikas walking around here.
Well, I've done a lot of work in Southern California. Still have a lot of clients there. And you have a very intrusive state government, and you know, got all these labor suits and everything. Mm-hmm. But remember, salespeople are almost always at-will employees.
So, yes.
They don't have the same. Ironically, they don't have the same crazy state bureaucracy over them that the secretary has.
Yeah. I guess most do. Yeah. Especially outside salespeople. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. But you can't really do that with inside salespeople unless they're willing to do it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, it's very interesting. The whole, if you get in a battle with a client or a company about what can you do, what can't you do, you've got your answer right there about who you ought to be working with.
Yeah, that's right.
When I go in to work with a company, we build a very, very high trust culture and a culture of a lot of feedback, feedback-rich culture. And when you do that, you don't have these arguments at all. People understand that who they are is what's going to drive their success, not arguing about are you going to get sued if you ask someone what they want to make. If you're in that universe, go somewhere else anyway, because you're going to end up in litigation over something.
Now, how about a situation where, I mean, it's good to, we're going to have to come to a close, but this is really fascinating stuff, Maury. Thanks for spending time with us. It's just really, I'm very interested in this, and I know our listeners are. But one last question, what about if you have a situation where the CEO is just as bad as the salespeople? You know, the CEO is, he's messing around with someone, you know, and he's, so he can't really come down on other people for that kind of thing, or he's drinking, or, you know, he's, you know, getting high in back of the... I'll never forget one client I went to, just a story to illustrate this. I went to this client on the first day to try to help him with his business. And he goes, you know, why don't you go take a look at Jim, the warehouse manager, who's really important cog in the wheel here, and just give me your input on him. So I go in the back and I sit down with Jim, and I'm noticing Jim's acting a little bit odd. His, you know, looks like his eyes are droopy and stuff. So Jim goes to the bathroom, and I sniff Jim's Gatorade, and sure enough, it's vodka. So I tell the owner, Jim's drinking vodka. He goes, yeah, I know. Well, that was the end of that whole deal. But, I mean, what about if you have a situation like that?
Hey, if you're the consultant, then you hightail it out of there as soon as you can.
I did.
I fired clients for issues like that.
I did.
Yeah, I had a consulting assignment once with five CEOs. This happened to be another country. And we sat down and I said, all right, what's the burning issue for you guys? And to a person, they said their mistresses drive them nuts.
Well, get a new mistress, right?
That's interesting. This is the shortest consulting agreement I've ever had. They wanted me to help them manage their relationship with their mistresses.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, so I thought, this is not exactly my gig.
Get
out of there, yeah.
The CEO has got a – I guess my only point is that as leaders, if we're trying to bring about change in our organization, whether it's helping people to be – salespeople to be more challenging, or whether it's, you know, getting folks to, you know, sort of be closer to the – values espoused by the company, that you know, we've got to live that stuff first. That's not – nothing's going to change unless we do. People will do what you do, not what you say, right?
Yeah. Do what you do. Yeah. And you have to decide why you're in business in the first place. All my successful clients have the same drive, and it is not to make a ton of money. They do that anyway.
Yeah.
Their drive is to grow their people at work.
Yeah, that's right.
Have
yeah.
better lives.
And yeah, and create succession.
But that's the driver for the most successful companies that I work with.
I think it is. I think it's exciting yeah. for leaders to see, you know, Bob and Susie, who started with me 15 years ago, now elevated to a leadership position that I used to have. And they've grown into that, and I've helped them to grow into that. And they're the successors, and they're now building their successors. And that, you see, now that's a very exciting thing, I think, for entrepreneurs to do. And, of course, the money is sort of the reward, is the symbol for all that, and get to enjoy that. But, yeah, it's not the driver. Yeah, it's not the driver.
No. The money gives you choices.
Yeah, yep. yeah. Well, thank you, Maury. I appreciate that. I encourage people to go check it out, that Harvard Business Review, and also go check out what Maury is doing, and go to
fifthwaveleadership.com.
There you go, fifthwaveleadership.com. Also, that's a very nice website, too, if I do say so myself. So always happy to help you with that stuff, Maury. Well, good. Thank you so much, Maury, for joining us. Again, go check it out, fifthwaveleadership.com. .com. Hey, any new books coming, Maury? Or are we working on something? Or
not right this moment. What I've got in the back of my head is actually in my autobiography. I've been asked by a number of people to put it down on paper. So I may start working on that fairly soon.
Hey, have you now? What's going to happen? Because you know, Newt. I mean, it's unbelievable that Newt can actually be a front runner here. Now that speaking of cheating on your wife. Which is really too bad, because I did like what's his name now? His name's just completely out of my mind.
Herman Cain.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Herman Cain. But nevertheless, have you talked to your buddy Newt there, Maury?
I just talked to the people who run the campaign the other day, and reminded them of my work with Newt in mid '90s. So,
yeah,
I could be helping them again or not. I haven't heard back at this point.
Well, that'd be interesting. That would be interesting. That would we sure love to see you in that kind of position. That'd be very helpful to everybody.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Well, we appreciate it, Maury. We appreciate it. Thank you for joining us again. That was Maury Shekman. Go check it out, Fifth Wave Leadership. You're listening to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. Go nowhere. We'll be right back.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works, and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results. Winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster, Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you will receive an email to let you know and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at complianceposter.com.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome to Small Business Hour right here on the SBN Network. Mark Dio, Matt Walker with you. That was our good friend Maury Scheckman with Fifth Wave Leaderships talking to us about how important it is to be a challenger. I mean, I guess that's true, Matt. You know, when we challenge people, we help them to you know, kind of dig deep for what's the best. You know, I mean, I know I learned more in my life from people who've challenged me than people who've given me a free ride. Maybe it wasn't, I don't know about you, but maybe it wasn't as pleasant, but it was more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's something that we all need to learn how to do. And I want to encourage folks to go check out that Harvard Business Review article. Just put go into Google, Harvard Business Review, sales versus challenge, and then boom, it'll pop up. Nevertheless, we are today, and I was kind of surprised, Matthew, and I mentioned this in our show last week, that the Black Friday sales – both the number of buyers as well as the dollars purchased were higher, it would seem that that is a sign of economic recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But yet there are still businesses having a pretty tough time out there. Local business, I guess this business is in Rhode Island, is a jewelry store.
Mm-hmm.
Realized that their best way to recover cash was to unload some of their inventory. that ultimately, it was their inventory that was keeping them
upside down. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and I maybe you can imagine that with jewelry stores. That's a tremendous amount of inventory to carry. Or, you know, even look at, like, furniture stores. And a lot of that stuff is, you know, through flooring companies or, you know, what are known as flooring companies, which are inventory financing companies. But at the same time, you know, there are interest fees. There are flooring costs that have to be paid. So those – that can be very expensive. So a strong recommendation for retailers or wholesale companies or particularly B2C, what can you do to reduce your level of inventory? I mean, that means you might have to have a really good system of inventory management so you can understand precisely how the inventory turnover is on different products or different categories. And you can have that what they call, you know, just-in-time delivery so that you're mm-hmm. getting inventory in just at the moment that you will be turning that. Companies like Walmart and Sam's and Costco are very good at that. And we don't have to have, you know, a huge company and sophisticated systems to do that. That just means we have to pay attention to that and analyze, you know, what is turning over and what is making money. But I often see businesses, I walk through their warehouse, and, you know, they tend to take those low-turn items and put them up high, and they're out of sight and out of mind. So I like to say get rid of the racks above, you know, above eye level. Because if we have racks above eye level, that's a great place to hide our cash that we can't use.
Yeah.
So things that you can do, you know, a simple inventory report. I mean, there are, I don't know, probably thousands of software systems that you can purchase for, you know, less than a couple hundred dollars that will help you to, you know, track your inventory. Now, that means you might have to do some data entry up front. You might have to spend some time running reports and looking at those reports. But at least, you know, don't take your cash and put it in a suitcase and, you know, throw it up at the top of the racks where you can't get to it, where you can't use it, because you might need that cash in order to stay in business, to keep you fluid and keep you liquid and stuff like that. That makes sense, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, one of our tips here we want to give you here on the Small Business Hour for, you know, managing your business more effectively. Well, nevertheless, Matthew, I think we've covered a great deal of ground. Any technological updates here we have for people, technology updates?
Nothing new, but I would just say remain active on those social networks. And, you know, over the holidays, it's a good time for you to sort of engage people personally, I think, on a lot of those networks. It's a good excuse for you to get in and start to build your relationships even further with people that you might have just sort of had at a very sort of high level, you know, just sort of almost at an internet stranger basis, almost. You can become more like internet friends and use the holidays as an excuse to do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know a lot of people, especially people in the selling role, that use this time just to thank people. You know, it's Thanksgiving. It's a holiday season coming up, saying, you know, thanks for a good year. Thanks for being in touch. Or, you know, we haven't heard from you this year. That's okay. We're thinking about you. Hope you're thinking about us. Have a good season. That's all. And that touch, whether it's through social media or email or blasts that you send out, or a telephone call for that matter, can be very, very powerful. I mean, I know many people who have actually gotten business just from doing that, just from doing that. So it's a powerful thing to do. Nevertheless, this will be our last broadcast for this year, 2011. We'll be back with you in 2012. Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Hour. And give us your feedback. Give us your input. What kind of information? A lot of people have said they want to hear some of the old shows again, Matthew. So we'll be playing some of those back, those back shows, those previous shows. But tell us what's on your mind. And again, please have a positive, a productive, and a very profitable week and a very profitable coming week. We'll see you in 2012.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.